diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, a victory for South Africa and the Palestinian people at the International Court of Justice.
The court considers that, with regard to the present situation, Israel must, in accordance with its obligations under the Genocide Convention, in relation to Palestinians in Gaza, take all measures within its power to prevent the commission of all acts within the scope of Article 2 of the Convention.
State parties to the Genocide Convention will now have to act, starting with Israel's friends.
The states that are close to Israel that have influence there are going to be aware of their obligations to prevent genocide, given that they have some impact on Israel.
One of those friends is Canada, with famous double standards.
Canada, subsequent to the decision in the Russia case or the Myanmar case, said that the International Court of Justice is a pillar of the rules-based international order. We must comply with the decisions. All people must comply. Myanmar, Russia, all these nasty characters. But when Israel comes along and does things that are even worse, their position is diametrically opposed to the one that they took in the Myanmar case. These people have no shame.
This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Help us deliver this weekly package of Earth news. Subscribe at greenplanetmonitor.net. Israeli lawyers may have thought they dodged a bullet at the International Court of Justice last Friday in The Hague, when the court ruled on South Africa's application against Israel under the 1948 Genocide Convention. Days after that ruling, the Israelis are certainly not uncorking champagne. In a virtually unanimous decision, the UN's supreme judicial body delivered the lion's share of what South Africa had requested from the court. The core of that request, that an urgent injunction or provisional measures order be issued calling on Israel not to commit genocide in Gaza. That's precisely what the ICJ did. In doing so, it acknowledged the plausibility of South Africa's genocide charges. Court President Joan Donoghue, a former U.S. State Department official, delivered a withering summary of the situation Gaza's 2.3 million people face after 16 weeks of unrelenting Israeli violence. In her 45-minute presentation to a packed chamber of attorneys and diplomats, Donoghue quoted a host of senior U.N. officials, human rights experts, and the UN Secretary General himself, describing a situation in Gaza that looks, sounds, and smells like genocide. Here's Judge Joan Donoghue reading out the court's reasoning and its order last Friday.
The court considers that the civilian population in the Gaza Strip remains extremely vulnerable. It recalls that the military operation conducted by Israel after 7 October 2023 has resulted inter alia in tens of thousands of deaths and injuries and the destruction of homes, schools, medical facilities, and other vital infrastructure, as well as displacement on a massive scale. The court notes that the operation is ongoing and that the Prime Minister of Israel announced on 18 January 2024 that the war, I quote, will take many more long months, end of quote. At present, many Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have no access to the most basic foodstuffs, potable water, electricity, essential medicines, or heating. The World Health Organization has estimated that 15% of the women giving birth in Gaza Strip are likely to experience complications and indicates that maternal and newborn death rates are expected to increase due to the lack of access to medical care. In these circumstances, the court considers that the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip is at serious risk of deteriorating further before the court renders its final judgment. The court recalls Israel's statement that it has taken certain steps to address and alleviate the conditions faced by the population in the Gaza Strip. The court further notes that the Attorney General of Israel recently stated that a call for intentional harm to civilians may amount to a criminal offense, including that of incitement, and that several such cases are being examined by Israeli law enforcement authorities. While such steps are to be encouraged, they are insufficient to remove the risk that irreparable prejudice will be caused before the court issues its final decision in the case. In light of the foregoing, the court considers that there is urgency in the sense that there is a real and imminent risk that irreparable prejudice will be caused to the rights found by the court to be plausible before it gives its final decision. The court concludes, on the basis of the aforementioned considerations, that the conditions required by its statute for it to indicate provisional measures are met. It is therefore necessary, pending its final decision, for the court to indicate certain measures in order to protect the rights claimed by South Africa that the court has found to be plausible. The court considers that, with regard to the present situation, Israel must, in accordance with its obligations under the Genocide Convention, in relation to Palestinians in Gaza, take all measures within its power to prevent the commission of all acts within the scope of Article 2 of the Convention, in particular, A, killing groups members of the group, B, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, and D, imposing measures intended to prevent bursts within the group. The court recalls that these acts fall within the scope of Article 2 of the Convention when they are committed with the intent to destroy in whole or in part the group as such. The court further considers that Israel must ensure with immediate effect that its military forces do not commit any of the aforementioned acts. The court is also of the view that Israel must take measures within its power to prevent and punish the direct and public incitement to commit genocide in relation to the members of the Palestinian group in the Gaza Strip. The court further considers that Israel must take immediate and effective measures to enable the provision of urgently needed basic services and humanitarian assistance to address the adverse conditions of life faced by Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Israel must also take effective measures to prevent the destruction and ensure the preservation of evidence related to allegations of acts within the scope of Article 2 and Article 3 of the Genocide Convention against members of the Palestinian group in the Gaza Strip. Regarding the provisional measure requested by South Africa, that Israel must submit a report to the court on all measures taken to give effect to the order, the court recalls that it has the power, reflected in Article 78 of the Rules of Court, to request the parties to provide information on any matter connected with the implementation of any provisional measures it has indicated. In view of the specific provisional measures it has decided to indicate, the court considers that Israel must submit a report to the court on all measures taken to give effect to this order within 1 month as from the date of this order. The report so provided shall then be communicated to South Africa, which shall be given the opportunity to submit to the court its comments thereon. The court recalls that its orders on provisional measures under Article 41 of the statute have binding effect and thus create international legal obligations for any party to whom the provisional measures are addressed. The court reaffirms that the decision given in the present proceedings in no way prejudges the question of the jurisdiction of the court to deal with the merits of the case or any questions related to the admissibility of the application or to the merits themselves. It leaves unaffected the right of the governments of the Republic of South Africa and the State of Israel to submit arguments in respect of these questions. The order then states that the court deems it necessary to emphasize that all parties to the conflict in the Gaza Strip are bound by international humanitarian law. It is gravely concerned about the fate of the hostages abducted during the attack in Israel on 7 October 2023 and held since then by Hamas and other armed groups, and calls for their immediate and unconditional release.
International Court of Justice President Joan Donahue reading out the World Court's provisional measures order against Israel on Friday, January 26th in The Hague. Minutes after the court session, I reached out to Canadian international law professor and genocide scholar William Schabas. I reached William Schabas in London.
I think it's a very great achievement for South Africa to win this order. I think it's a very, very important order. It not only does it call for Israel not to do things, but it calls on Israel to do a number of things, including to provide immediate and effective measures to provide urgently needed basic services. And they talk about the catastrophic humanitarian situation in Gaza. So this is very, very, very important order, and Israel's going to have to report on it in 1 month. And South Africa will see what they've reported. So it means that the court remains seized of this order. And that's another important part of it. It's an ongoing issue. If the court didn't think that there was a serious situation, it wouldn't have made such an order. I think the other remarkable thing about it is how unanimous it is. So there are the Israeli judge, Barak, the ad hoc judge, does not agree with some of the orders, although he does agree with others. But for some of them, he votes against them, but he's alone, or I should say he's supported by one other judge, the Ugandan judge, Julio Sebutindi. The rest of them are unanimous, and that, too, is an absolutely remarkable achievement. It's not the first time it's happened at the court, but this is a very, very sensitive and controversial issue, and I think if you were to get 14 of your friends together in a room and say, can we agree on a statement about Israel and Palestine, unless you live in a little cocoon, you would have real trouble getting that agreement.
The court did not order a halt or a ceasefire.
That was a huge ask, and it was difficult. It wasn't asked to order a ceasefire. It was asked only to order a halt to its military activity in Gaza. And this was going pretty far. I mean, with Ukraine 2 years ago, the court ordered Russia to cease its military activity inside Ukraine because obviously it was in another country and it had no right to be there. But this is different. This is an occupied territory. And where Israel, it had some cause for a response following the 7th of October. And so ordering it to stop all military activity when missiles are being fired into Israel from Gaza, it's asking an awful lot of the court to make such an order. I'm not surprised that they didn't do it. People think they might have reformulated it otherwise, and perhaps South Africa could have shown them how to do that as well.
What will be the impact, Bill Schabas, of this ruling? I mean, normally the Security Council would take positive measures in response to an ICJ ruling, but of course it's unlikely to do so because of the veto. What impact is this provisional measures order going to have amongst Israel's other allies? Like, I'm thinking specifically about these five countries, European countries and Canada, that wrote their declaration to the court in mid-November, and countries across the global south.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how they react to it. I wouldn't rule out the possibility of a Security Council resolution. I think this is, given the unanimity, the near unanimity of the decision, I don't think it's out of the question that there could be a Security Council resolution, perhaps with a few abstentions. Maybe the U.S. and the U.K. would abstain in such a resolution, but they would let it through. If I were a member of the Security Council, I'd be busy drafting a resolution that will take this order into account. I wouldn't rule that out. And as for the conduct of other states, they're going to feel the states that are close to Israel that have influence there are going to be aware of their obligations to prevent genocide, given that they have some impact on Israel. I think most countries in the global south assume they have no impact whatsoever on Israel's behavior. But there are other countries that will feel this, and this will energize those within the country who expect their governments to do things to prevent genocide, to take positions with Israel, and so on.
Justice Donahue's comments were, of course, on behalf of the court, and she was reading from the order. But boy, the comments were stinging. They were withering. She quoted all sorts of UN officials, the UN Secretary General. She quoted Yoav Galant and his various seemingly genocidal comments. How would you describe the tone of the presentation by the court?
Well, the court, in making a provisional measures order in principle, is not ruling on the merits, although it does have to make conclusions about certain factual things, and it's clear from as you point out, some of the things that they draw people's attention to. It's their way of sending a message that they consider the situation in Gaza to be totally unacceptable, and their scope. It's not as if they're not like a doctor who's coming in and telling them all the things that are wrong with what they're doing. They have to frame what they're saying within the scope of the Genocide Convention and the acts of genocide that are listed in the convention. But that being said, it's a very, very powerful message.
William Schabas is a professor of international law at Middlesex University and professor of international humanitarian law and human rights at Leiden University. Read more about South Africa's application to the International Court of Justice under the 1948 Genocide Convention and the court's provisional measures order at greenplanetmonitor.net. While you're there, subscribe. With your help, we'll keep delivering stories about planet Earth, human development, justice, and science to listen to, read, and watch. Of further wisdom about last Friday's ICJ ruling in South Africa versus Israel, the GPM reached out to Dimitri Lascaris, a lawyer, human rights activist, and journalist based in Montreal and southern Greece. Hello, Dimitri Lascaris. Welcome once again to the Green Planet Monitor.
Dr. Kattenberg, always a pleasure to speak to you.
Dimitri, tell me what your assessment is, your quick assessment of Friday's decision order by the International Court of Justice, issuing six provisional measures orders in the case South Africa versus Israel over the Genocide Convention. What's your quick assessment of this order?
It's a crushing defeat for Israel. It's a massive victory for South Africa, but for above all the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian people. The only issue here is how are we going to implement this decision? That's the real issue, and that's a very difficult issue. But on paper, as a matter of law, is this a stunning victory for South Africa and the Palestinian people? Absolutely, 100%. The court rejected everything that Israel said. Israel denied that the court had jurisdiction. The court rejected that. Israel denied that there was plausible evidence that it was committing the requisite acts under Section 2 of the Genocide Convention. The court rejected that. Israel argued that there was no evidence of genocidal intent, as it's defined in Section 2 of the Genocide Convention. The court not only rejected that, but said there's enough evidence to issue provisional measures. And the court, furthermore, gave essentially not in every respect, but the vast majority from a substantive perspective of what South Africa sought as provisional measures, it got. And finally, there was the proportion of the judges who voted in support of South Africa's position on all of these issues versus those who didn't. I mean, I was very, very confident that South Africa was going to win this, but even I never imagined that every single one of the Western judges would side with South Africa, including both the German judge and the American judge who was a State Department official under Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. And we all know how pro-Israel Hillary Clinton is. So this is just an absolutely stunning rebuke of Israel and a tremendous victory by South Africa, but above all, by the Palestinian people.
So four of the six orders passed by a vote of 15-2, and the other two provisional measures orders passed by a vote of 16-1. I mean, the court passed by an overwhelming majority all six provisional measures order, but there was no ceasefire order. South Africa's number one requested provisional measure was that Israel be ordered to immediately suspend its warfare in Gaza. That was not amongst the provisional measures order. How do you take that?
I think it's a distinction without a difference. I'm going to read to you the language that matters. I mean, all of the provisional measures matter for different reasons. But the one relating to the hostilities reads as follows. Israel must take all, I repeat, all measures within its power to prevent the commission of all acts within the scope of Article 2 of the Genocide Convention, which defines genocide. In particular, A, killing members of the group, B, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, and D, imposing measures intended to prevent births. And then the court said, Israel must ensure with immediate effect that its military forces do not commit any of the described acts. I can't imagine language more sweeping and unequivocal than this. And let me just point out a couple of features of this language. First of all, it's addressed to Israel. It's not addressed to the belligerents. It's not addressed to Hamas. So it's telling Israel unconditionally. In other words, you have to do this irrespective of anything that anybody else, including Hamas or Islamic Jihad, does.
Because, of course, Hamas is, needless to say, not a party to the Genocide Convention, and it's not a party to the, wasn't a party to the application to the ICJ.
And it's not a state.
It's not a state.
The ICJ deals with disputes between states. So there was a perfectly, you know, valid legal reason why this was not addressed to Hamas. But the fact is, whatever the reason, it's not addressed to Hamas.
So this was a ceasefire. I've heard it said, it's been told to me, this was a ceasefire order without really ordering for a ceasefire.
Yeah, but one other thing I have to point out before I answer your question, David, is that the killing, the cessation of killing, maiming, traumatizing, covers the members of the group. That's what the court said. Who are the members of the group? The members of the group is Palestinians in Gaza. So the court, that's all Palestinians in Gaza. The court didn't distinguish between quote unquote innocent Palestinians and culpable Palestinians. The members of the group are all Palestinians in Gaza. So what the court is saying here is you must stop now killing, maiming, and traumatizing all Palestinians in Gaza. How is that not a unilateral ceasefire? It is clearly a prohibition on any further use of force that has the effect of killing, maiming, or traumatizing Palestinians in Gaza. An absolute unconditional prohibition. This is better than a ceasefire.
And the amazing thing is, perhaps the most remarkable shout-provoking provisional measures order was that Israel has to report back to the ICJ in 30 days and provide a progress report. I mean, the question is, will it do it?
That's very important what you just said. It places Israel in a massive quandary. Because if Israel comes back, it just says, we're not going to report to you, then it's clearly violating the court's order. And it's also going to raise a very serious question of why aren't you reporting back? If you were innocent of any wrongdoing, why wouldn't you come forward and tell the court what you've done? Now, if it comes back and it reports, we killed Palestinians, but guess what? They were used by Hamas as human shields, and we only killed people who are from Hamas. That's not going to fly, because the court already listened to that argument, the human shields argument, we are taking all measures necessary to minimize the civilian casualties. Yes, there are some, but that can't be helped. The court has rejected all of that and ruled that out as an excuse. So they're going to have to come back for them to comply with this provision. They're going to have to come back with a report within 30 days. And what they're going to have to report, honestly, is that they didn't kill or maim or traumatize anybody in Gaza. That's what they're going to have to report. And they've already violated that, David. They did that in the last 24 hours. They're already in severe violation of this order. And there's no way to avoid admitting that to the court other than not filing a report, which would be a flagrant violation of the order.
Now, another interesting thing about all this that I've not really heard anybody talk about is that, to my knowledge, this is the first time ever in the state of Israel's, 76-year history that it's presented itself to a court, indeed the highest legal tribunal in the world. Israel has never defended itself or allowed itself to be questioned before a court. And so when those six battery of Israeli lawyers were sitting there at the Peace Palace, I thought, this is amazing. They're sitting before 17 justices. They've never done this before. And now they're told, you got to come, you know, they came back for the ruling, and now they got to come back in 30 days. This is remarkable, I think.
I totally agree. I mean, this takes away the argument that we weren't there to defend ourselves, and therefore this court's decision is not reflective of the facts. They decide, I was rather surprised. I mean, of course, as you said, they have a longstanding practice of avoiding participation in any international tribunal that is assessing their conduct.
I mean, they don't let special rapporteurs into the country. They don't let special investigating commissions to come visit. They've imposed a sweeping ban on, I think, all human rights officials. They will not be judged. They will not allow themselves to be judged. But here they are sitting at the International Court of Justice.
Yeah, and you know, Dave, I've asked myself why they suddenly changed their approach to the international legal system. Again, this is pure speculation on my part. It's the only thing that makes any sense to me. Is that they believed, wrongly obviously, that a majority of the judges on this court were going to be inclined to reject South Africa's position. And so they believed, you know, that the system was basically rigged in their favor in advance, that the U.S. would be able to, you know, coerce, cajole, pressure the court into ruling in Israel's favor, that there were enough Western judges, like, you know, the president, who is, as I said, a former State Department official, like the German judge. We all know how obsequious the German government is towards Israel. You know, the Japanese judge, the Slovakian judge, and all the rest. And I guess maybe they calculated that they were going to win this thing and all they had to do was show up. Well, man, they couldn't have been more wrong.
Dmitry, genocide. It's really hard to prove genocide because it's very hard to prove intent, and the core of genocide is intent, dolus specialis. You've got to have specific intent to commit genocide. You can commit all manner of war crimes, you know, killing people, disproportionate violence, collective punishment, forced displacement, targeting hospitals, ambulances, but these are grave war crimes under international humanitarian law, but they don't add up to genocide. You've got to prove specific intent. It's a very high bar, isn't it? And there's all sorts of commentary. It's interesting that in a couple of these, in Aharon Barak's statements, Aharon Barak said, in my view, the appropriate legal framework for analyzing the situation in Gaza is international humanitarian law, not the Genocide Convention. And Judge Sebutinde, Ugandan, thus, while it is not inconceivable that grave violations of international humanitarian law amounting to war crimes or crimes against humanity could have been committed in Gaza, the court has no jurisdiction over IHL, only genocide. So there's two questions here. Genocide, it's a really high bar to prove. But at the same time, look at what Israel's doing. Even Israel's supporters acknowledge that what it's doing is really potentially in gross violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which is not genocide, but it's pretty bad.
Well, it can be both, right? It can be both genocide and crimes against humanity and war crimes. But basically, the language you just quoted to me, David, is sort of, to put it to you in non-technical terms, it's legal gobbledygook. What they're really saying in fancy sort of theoretical way is they don't believe the evidence is sufficient to justify the granting of relief that South Africa has requested, and particularly on the question of intent. The problem that they have is that Israel seems to have, Israel's leaders right across the